Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's been a long hiatus from us. The Starlight Podcast is what we call ourselves for those familiar with the High Republic. But we are back and we have a new face to the crew. So Dagavir, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yo, what's up, guys? I'm Lord Dagavir. I love Star Wars. You've probably seen my face pog champing on the internet with other reactions and lore videos, but I'm here with my boy Connor and Jonathan. Let's go. I'm ready, fam.
Awesome. And I'm Jedi Connor for those who do not know if you're new to this podcast and big Star Wars fan, make content on TikTok, occasional podcast, which is what we've got going on here. So I'm super excited. And we've got one of my best friends, John Bates, aka Daddy Sheev, on TikTok.
Yeah, long retired Daddy Sheev, but I'm also a big Star Wars fan and ready to get into some Andor here.
Absolutely. So we first let's start off with going into season two before we laid eyes on anything within the first episode. What were your guys' expectations coming into this new series, or it's not a new series, new season of Andor with a new kind of release style of multiple episode releases. So what were your guys' initial reactions?
You can go, Jonathan. Yeah, be good.
Oh, I got it. All right. I would say really excited. I mean, season one was just so well made and produced that I just knew I had a feeling they're gonna do a great job with season two. And also I liked how Hero and How was gonna lead up to the opening act of Rogue One. And I was intrigued to see how each episode or arc, I should say, three episodes is gonna be a year time jump. That's something I haven't really seen in Star Wars before, so that was definitely getting me excited. And I mean, to be honest, I think this is the best Star Wars show and that Disney's made, so expectations are high.
Yeah,
Awesome, awesome.
I think that makes a bunch of sense. I personally feel like Mandalorian season for the first two seasons of Mandalorian are like untouchable just because of what happened outside of it. You know, this is the way. I was like, dude, everywhere I walked in the Star Wars shorts, somebody was saying that. I'm not saying Andor isn't the best, but expectation-wise, I know this is going to be the best-looking Star Wars TV show ever because that's what I expect. But I also believe that Andor is a little slow, and that's okay because it is a slow burn. And when you sit down and watch everything at the end of the day, yeah, this is probably the best-written Star Wars TV show by far. I mean, that's all kind of like ringing true right now with these first three episodes. And yeah, it's still the best-looking Star Wars that I've seen right now visually. Absolutely.
And for me personally, I Andor season one is so is up there with the Mandalorian season one for me. Those are like the two untouchables for me. And I just love that they go for it in Andor. A lot with a lot of Star Wars, I've found that they played a little bit safe a lot of times. So I was super excited to see how far they go in this season. And with the different release schedule, it's a little bit harder to make content, I feel like, for it because you're trying to like fit every single piece of information in like a video, multiple videos within like a week. But I think it's cool that we get that satisfaction of an individual arc. Like it kind of mirrors this the season one where we get first three episodes of or first two episodes of real like build up almost, and then we get a conclusion. But now we get to just kind of binge watch it if that's what you so choose to do. But I was super excited going into this. All of the Rotten Tomato reviews that came out in the past couple of days have been like 98%. Like this is the best Star Wars ever, and like obviously Disney is going to pump their good reviews. But like I had seen so many really good reactions to this, and some of my friends got to see some of our friends literally got to see the first episode at Star Wars Celebration. Some people got to
Oh,
see
they got to see it early. Oh,
the
that's cool.
entire season
Yeah, the
early,
entire season. Yes.
Whoa.
and I like I've heard only good things. I haven't heard any bad things, so I was super excited. But are you guys ready to just kind of jump right into it?
Yo, I'm
Let's
ready, fam. Let's
I'm
go.
so
So
ready.
let's start with this scene for me. The opening scene where Cassian is talking to like a new recruit basically trying to help him steal this TIE Avenger. that scene for me really set the tone of kind of where Cassian is at with his in his mind. Because when we first meet him, he's like, he wants to fight. He like wanted to fight the Empire, but he found that spark in season one, and now he has that spark and is trying to light it for others. What did you guys think of that opening scene? Just that conversation and how Cassian is at that point.
I kind of just felt like classic Star Wars. I mean, I thought like, I mean, the show is just impeccably produced. Like, I really like loved how they set the tone, the setting of, you know, the Empire test facility. And it really shows from season, like you just noted, Connor, like Andor's character arc from one to two, and just how he's just so changed already in just a year. I also found it really interesting that he couldn't like fly the TIE, and that makes sense as it's like an entirely new ship. And it seemed like at that point, you know, Cassian is like really in control of situations and such, and then he gets into this TIE and has no idea what he's doing. So I thought that was quite the cool contrast there. And also kind of like some callbacks as he's like, you know, flying through the tunnels and such, and shooting down the tunnel and all that. It was just really nice callbacks to classic Star Wars. It just felt like such nostalgia just seeing that opening scene.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I loved it. I'm one of those people, I'm very detail oriented. So it's not even really about like Cassian, because although I wasn't really, that's one of the things I didn't like about Andor season one. I was like, I don't know if I could watch an entire series about Cassian Andor. You know, it's just one side character from Rogue One. Yeah. I wouldn't even have named the series Andor. I would have named it Rise of the Rebellion or something, because I think it's just too, and a casual fan isn't going to know who Cassian is. But at least now, in this series, I have way more appreciation for who he is and who he's going to become when we see him in Rogue One. But there's that part where he's talking to Nia, that girl that's helping him mess with the TIE Avenger. Yeah. And I just, again, I'm really big on the visuals. And they're talking to one another. And behind them, you see the window. And it's like just showing out in the darkness and the cold of Sinar on this new planet where all the TIE fighters are being made. And there's this wind gust that blows like every once in a while they're talking. And it just shows like the level of detail that's put into this show. And I was like, damn, bro, where's that ambience right now, bro? I need right now. It's just so gorgeous. I don't know, man. It's just like all the other shows, even The Mandalorian, you know, like I just feel like ambience hasn't been the same from TV. From movies, you know, like Star Wars has legendary ambient settings, but like this, bro, I like every single frame was like, oh my God, look at that. Wow, look at that, you know? So yeah, just like, it's been so amazing to see that. And then I think it helps with like Cassian being there with the TIE tester pilot and everything and taking off with the Avenger. Like, yeah, dude, it's just really good just for those parts right now.
Right,
it's,
right.
Yeah, and worth it, yeah.
I think one of the big, like one of the points that you make, Dagavir, is that like, I think the big difference between this show and a lot of other shows visually is they don't use the volume.
No.
And for those who don't know, the volume is like the new technology where they basically like before shooting, they have the scene and like the, basically the post-production stuff. They do that before.
Yes.
And it's projected onto this volume, this stage, but Andor, uses real sets. Like everything seems a little bit more real in this show. And I think that's a big point to the cinematography and the directing that goes into this. And everything kind of seems a little bit more tactile on that end. So I can totally appreciate the way this looks. And let's stick with Cassian a little bit here. So he gets that clunky exit, and then we get a really cool trench scene where he is kind of flying in and out and narrowly escapes the Empire. And then we see that he gets to this planet, right?
He gets to this planet.
I wonder which one.
Yeah. So he gets to this planet and he lands, and something is awry. And you see that there is this group of like, it's like a rebel cell, right?
Yeah.
But something is amiss that you find out. What did you guys think of Cassian like meeting these rebels and them basically arguing with each other the entire time? And you realize like something's wrong. Like, like something happened to the person who Cassian was supposed to meet? Like what were your guys' thoughts on that?
I thought it was really great, kind of cool to see, you know, that the and the New Hope, you know, wasn't always smooth. This is like the early, you know, comings of that. This is like a separate rebel cell. It was interesting that Cassian even knows who they are. They don't know him. There's a lot of infighting, and it's really quite early until we see like the entire, you know, rebel cell, all the rebels, like, you know, uniform into one. It was really interesting to see, like, even within themselves, like fighting each other instead of, you know, trying to work together. I thought that was really interesting to see, like, the early start of the kind of rebellion here. What about you guys?
Man, I feel like it's everything that we see on Twitter. Like, I just felt like it was just like I looked in the mirror, you know, like what's going on with all these people? We're all on the same side. I also felt like it was just everybody that I ever played with in FIFA clubs and also Battlefront ranked. I just like, guys, what are we doing here? Like, and you know, like Cassian is so damn annoyed, bro. He's like, I'm not gonna be revived. You know? But I think that I was really annoyed watching that story arc just because, like, damn, bro, Andor's a little slow again. They have this unnecessary the conflict they have with Cassian. But then you start to realize how necessary it is and how Luke Skywalker blowing up the Death Star, Leia there as well. Like, bro, they're really overcompensating for, like, the rest of the rebellion and its issues, especially so early in the creation.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, I see. And Mothma and everybody else, you know, and so I understood after the second episode. But yeah, boy, Yavin, let's go, man. Where's Exar Kun, bro? I thought it was the Masasi Warriors, bro. Yeah. I was about to go crazy.
Yeah, I didn't really realize where they were until the.
No, I thought it was so
well done because every other planet in the three episodes they were like pointing out what it was, but not this planet. And I like. No. A little cameo at the end, seeing those temples.
Great. And one of the things that I really liked during, like, when Cassian is he's handcuffed, like being treated as a prisoner. He's always like finding little things to help them. Like he's always looking ahead and trying to like formulate a plan. He's like, why don't we grab some water? Why don't we like get a perimeter? Like he knows, and you can see that there's levels to this that like Cassian is all the way up here. And these rebels still need help. And you can tell.
Why he was the leader in the rebellion, just off of those few scenes and how, you know, he had to, you know, kind of guide them not get eaten by a giant rhino.
Yes, he was like, what are you doing, guys? Yeah. What are we doing? You know?
And exactly. I found it interesting, too. That rebel cell, the name's escaping me right now, but they were mentioned in season one by Saw Gerrera when he went on that incredible rant about how all the other rebel cells are lost. I saw that. So that was a nice little connection to season one.
Yeah. Do we ever hear who Porker was? I do not know who Porker. Yeah. I mean, we know Porkins, obviously, but.
Yeah,
but that was a completely different person. I didn't know who that was, but I think it says everything you need to know about like how Luthen is organizing this and all these other rebel cells that are happening around the galaxy. So
yeah. And that gives us a little pivot point to pivot to let's talk about like Luthen, Mon Mothma, Chandrilla. That arc we basically
love that. Basically, that's my favorite arc of the
I love the like the politics and stuff of this arc. Basically, where we see Mon Mothma, and remember, it's a year later from where we saw everybody in at the end of season one. We are at her daughter's wedding. Who, if you remember, Mon Mothma basically like made a deal to help the rebellion by. Basically having like an arranged marriage with her daughter and this crime lord's son. So like, what did you guys think of this tone of this story juxtaposed to with like what we've seen with Cassian and obviously like Bixxon and all that stuff. Daggerman, what were your thoughts on this arc?
Yeah. Yeah, it's harder for me to absorb as a Star Wars fan because it's the more intense, in-depth political part of Star Wars, which you know is out there, but it's not really something that's advertised in the movies, unless maybe you're a big fan of like Attack of the Clones. You know, I'm a big fan of Revenge of the Sith, which is arguably the most political thing in all of Star Wars until Andor showed up. But you know, yeah, I did my research. I read the Mask of Fear, you know, Reign of the Empire book, so it's helped me understand. Okay, Mon Mothma, she's definitely probably has the hardest job in all the rebellion. I need to put respect on her name, mm-hmm. you know. And it's also just sad because yes, like this is like someone like Luthen who is for good, is for all these things. And that monologue every single day, every single episode that we see, this man was spitting fire and was exactly true. Like he cannot be a human. He has to do all of this and he probably won't survive by the end of the season, you know, because we don't know who the hell he is. We've never heard of him in any of the movies or anything like that.
Yep.
And someone like Mon Mothma, where we know this is going to go with her monologue and everything else. Yeah. I feel like I don't think she's going to have a family after any of this. I think her family is just going to be a rebellion. You know, that's all she's going to have. She's like, she's in the game very soon here. And it's kind of sad to see. So
yeah. Bates, what do we think?
Yeah, it's definitely sad to see. And I think the theme that I'm noticing with the show is sacrifice. So we've seen it with all the characters. Like they're giving something up for the rebellion. And in Mon Mothma's case, she's literally given up her daughter to, you know, fund the rebellion, which is just crazy. But that just shows the show, like, you know, what they're willing to give up or sacrifice for, you know, the greater good of the galaxy. I also want to get into and get your guys' opinions on her, like, friend / former lover.
Tacoma.
That I thought that was so well, like presented and dialogued. And I want to get your thoughts on that, because in the first season, we kind of see him. It's a very calm guy, mm-hmm. and you know, close with Mon Mothma. We see a year later the pressure, but he can't hang. He wants out of the rebellion, and the pressure is getting to him. And I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on what you thought of that.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite aspects of this arc specifically. Tacoma, who we know, basically Mon like lets him in on like, hey, I'm part of this rebellion, like. Like, do you want in? And he said, yeah, like he says, yes, that's in season one. He's all in. But when we see him in season two, it's like things are not going well for him. Like he's losing money because of this rebellion. His wife has left him. So he is down bad. And I thought it was such an interesting turn of events that I didn't see him using blackmail to kind of get what he wants. He's basically telling Mon Mothma, like, hey, if you can't pay me off, like I'm going to the other side here. I'm letting everybody know like what's happening. So that was super interesting to me. It was something that I didn't expect. Dagger, I'm not sure what you thought, but that was something very surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't have any care in the world for characters that I don't know from the movies. And so I always assume that someone's going to be a fraud. And this guy's a fraud, you know? And but at the same time, too, it's not like, look, what this guy is doing is very real. And that's the thing. It's just like after so much, and we don't see his struggles. We don't know what he's going through. All we know is like, bro, this guy's losing all this money. And now he sees everybody reaping the rewards, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that is. I mean, Mothma's not really getting any rewards, but he for some reason is feeling like his time is up. And I think that's very similar to what we see in real life with people that just go through stress, don't know how to handle it. And yeah, bro, I mean I wouldn't want the Emperor coming on my knocking on my door saying I'm a traitor, bro, you know. So I can understand, but we are 4 years away from the Battle of Yavin, and things are only going to get more intense from here. So I get it. I understand. And bro, sucks to suck. But at the end of the day, man, he's not Mon Mothma or Bail Organa. So it is what it is.
One of the things I want to mention is Perrin, Mon Mothma's husband.
Mm.
There was a scene, and I'm not sure which episode it is. I think we're just kind of blend these episodes together. We're not going to go super chronologically, but there's a scene where he is toasting everybody, his daughter, like his daughter's new like husband, like, hey, like find the joy in things. And they keep panning to to Luthen and Mon Mothma, and they have this look of like concern because you know that they can't find joy in things, and that is Luthen's whole thing. He's like, I will never find joy. I will sacrifice myself for a sunset I will never see, or exact whatever the quote was. But that to me was pretty profound, where he's making this like he's on the other end of the spectrum, right? Like Perrin finds so much joy in everything, and it's too much. Like, you know what I mean? He is oblivious to anything. But I think it's something that we can all take to try to find some joy in hard times. But you see Mon Mothma, they and company do not have that luxury.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we can pivot again. My goat here, Orson Krennic, makes an appearance in that first
my
episode.
Goat. I don't want to deploy the garrison.
I got that blind? On the signboard. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite. He's one of my favorite Star Wars characters. I'm so glad he's back in this series. Like,
yeah.
He made Rogue One. He's one of my favorite Imperials.
He has been like one of my favorite Imperials. He wears the white, which is very contrast to like the dark side of like Vader and Palpatine. Like, they're always shaded and dark, and these guys are in white, bright. Like, you definitely can see them. What did you guys think of his entrance? Because this is something that I found was super fun.
I thought it was great. I mean, it's kind of, you know, setting the tone for the rest of the series. We get to kind of see, you know, the buildup of the Death Star and, you know, what kind of goes into that. I also found it very interesting that with all of the secrecy that they're still doing, because think about it, he's building a gigantic space station and not a single soul in the galaxy outside of the Empire knows. Even the people on the project don't even seem to know. Do you notice how he kept calling it an energy project from the Emperor? Didn't even mention the Death Star. So even like internal people have no idea what is going on. So I found that really, really interesting. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, at least for Krennic returning, I say about damn time. Yeah. Because there's a lot of characters I felt like first season could have used, and I'm assuming it was supposed to go for a lot more than two seasons. But hey, at the end of the day, at least we're getting this. But yes, when he's entering and talking about this whole energy thing and talking about the Gorman spiders, which is completely new, by the way. I don't know if that's an inspiration from the Kessel, you know, the Spice Mine spiders or the Weeb. Or the web weavers from Kashyyyk or whatever. Very interesting new detail. But he did mention reactors, encoding the reactors. So I was like, yeah, okay, Krennic. All right. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's about time, because the story has needed him. The story has needed K2SO and a lot of these other characters that should have been in there. But man, he's just such a whole other layer about the Imperials, because yes, he isn't in the all black. He's in the white, like Grand Admiral Thrawn, but he's completely different from Grand Admiral Thrawn, you know? And if you've read the lore, you know about these characters, especially Thrawn, Alliance, which is also really interesting, and he's in that book too with Tarkin. So yeah, just a lot of good stuff that we're getting, I feel like, from the expanded universe that's inside this story right now that I can't wait to see in the next couple arcs.
I really loved how Krennic talks like the most pompous Imperial. Like, he puts on like a show. He's like, we start off, we see him, he's like, this is the most important meeting you will ever have in your entire life. Like, you can't tell anybody about this.
Really,
this is my meeting. Yeah. No one even knows.
This is the best team on the planet, bro. We're like, gonna get all the rings, bro. Yeah.
this is the team. Like, I you're with me. And he uses this like video, like
propaganda video.
Thing. It's propaganda was the big theme of this meeting, where we're gonna say, like, hey, we are going to basically destroy these people, and we have planned for it. We've planted stuff. We've shaped the narrative. But I just thought it was so funny how he used this is what's so great about Gorman. Like it's
like a 1950s infomercial.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like some Fallout video or something, bro.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly wild. It's like from Fallout. And then like you see I just recently read The Hunger Games, so I've been on from Sunrise of the Reaping, the new Hunger Games book. And there is a big, the big theme there is propaganda. So the Capitol can basically write whatever message they want. And a lot of it is like, hey, we don't have to like force these ideals down someone. They just have to like give a confirmation to what people's biases already are, which is something that they hit on in this, where he's like, oh, we know that Gormans are a little bit stuck up. They only care about themselves. Like that, like they're just like shaping that narrative. And it's easy for people to believe. So I'm interested to see how that plays out on that end.
Yeah, they were going in. And, you know, I got the damn Star Wars propaganda book, you know, right over there. Yeah. I keep making videos on it and how the whole Compnor, like, recruits all these artists just so they could make sure the propaganda, misinformation, bias is so perfect. Yeah. God, dude, you know, and you could smell them. As soon as you see them on screen, you know these guys are working for the propaganda just because of the way they talk immediately. Yeah. So I was like, oh, God, man. But I'm glad they're leaning into that because propaganda is such a huge part of the Galactic Empire. So let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then, so let's look a little bit further. So let's hit on Cassian again. So at this point, Cassian is... they're in the trenches with each other. Basically, they have split into two teams. These rebels, they are fighting. They're hungry. Like, wow. How did you think Cassian played that situation where kind of uses some distractions to his advantage? And I don't know, what did you think about that whole sequence where they were fighting and decided to drop their weapons and then things go awry?
Oh, are you talking about when they did like a weird like rock, paper, scissors?
They were doing some rock, paper, scissors. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen that in Star Wars before, but I think it just shows like Andor's intelligence and how he's, you know, his background is like a, you know, gutterborn scum or something like that. Just kind of like using his street smarts and using his smarts to kind of get out of that situation. And even just showed like the rebels, like, what are you guys doing? Like doing rock, paper, scissors and, you know, just not really, you know, be having leaders, and Andor's able to take advantage of that. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is exactly what it is. It's just a bunch of scrubs trying to play leader at the end of the day. Like, I can't tell you how many times I hate using video game analogies, bro, but I swear to God, it reminds me every time I'm playing Fortnite or Marvel Rivals and ranked, and this guy's pretending to be tank, doesn't know what to do with the healer. You know, like, yeah, bro, are we all bots? And that's what I swear to God it was. Because even Cassian was embarrassed. Like, these are the people we're recruiting?
Like, yeah, like, seriously? This is who I'm funding? He literally was like, yeah, we're funding.
Yes. Like, what have you done? Exactly. And I was feeling for Cassian, too. I was like, bro, I just bought this hot new baby freaking TIE Avenger to this damn planet. And you guys are trying to pull it and move it. And you're all touching buttons. You're not listening to me. And what's also crazy, too, is like, you know, you see a little bit of like gray Cassian from Rogue One, where he has to kill the informant because he ends up killing one of the rebels that is inside the TIE Avenger when he leaves too, but he leaves the other guy that put him in shackles. So it's just very interesting, whole thing. So, I mean, at the end of the day, Cassian's got to do what he needs to do because those rebels are also stopping him from returning to his family, the only people that he has left. So, hey man, I understand, Cassian, you got to do what you got to do, bro. I don't judge you, you know? Yeah. Forget those rebels. We don't need them. Yeah.
They're bots anyway.
Yeah.
Hidden father, some would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Picked a great planet though. I will say that. Yeah. They picked a great planet. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's touch on that. Cause they were on Yavin 4, like
right there.
They
made it just a little early, but they're there.
So I'm sure Cassian will let Mon Mothma know that there is very formidable and habitable planet to store the rebellion on. So that was a nice little touch that that I appreciated.
Yeah.
But let's you talk about like Cassian's family. Let's actually touch on them because we haven't touched on like Bix and company. So like what did we think about this arc? We see that they are refugees on this planet and they are there illegally without visas. And basically there is there's like a check for like a census. And we find out that, you know, if they don't have visas, like they're here quote unquote illegally and stuff kind of goes awry. Like what did we think of that whole situation?
I mean, I think it just, what I'm noticing with this show is just so many themes to real life. Like, it's just like, you know, with them being refugees, it just has a lot of, you know, ties to what's going on in this country with, you know, a lot of illegal immigrants. And it was just really interesting to see that connection. And also from them leaving Ferrix, they're probably wanted, you know, criminals at this point. So, you know, they're on this like planet to kind of like lay low. And of course, the empires we've seen, you know, will go to any planet, take over, you know, impose their will kind of thing on the people. So, yeah, I thought that was a nice touch on this arc. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a little worse in terms of like how, just like we all know, like from the standpoint from the original trilogy, we know the Empire is bad, you know, but I think it's where like the video games, the expanded universe really get into the nitty gritty of like how crappy the Imperials are. And yeah, we know about Bad Batch and Clone Wars, you know, with the chain code stuff and all of a sudden, you know, the transition to the Republic into the Empire and how all that goes. I thought we were going to see like dozens of stormtroopers just scanning docks and everything else. Mm-hmm. But I did appreciate how they let the fans know, like, this is happening everywhere. This is on the Outer Rim, bro. You know, this is not the inner core planets. Like, the Empire is very big, but still in the Outer Rim, like, they're having trouble. There's,
like, no escaping them is kind of what they were.
Yes, doing. Yes, yes.
I mean, hey, no matter where you are.
Yeah, when Bix turns around and sees the Xanti-class cruiser, well, you know, just taking all the reconnaissance and looking at everything, scoping the area, it's just like, oh man, they know, like, we're already here. Like, I saw that, I would have gone. I would have did. Yeah. It's over right there in that point. But I appreciate how much they're helping us understand how vast the Empire and its grip on the galaxy is. And I think there needs to be more of that in TV shows because it just doesn't show how scary the Empire is and the level of like what they get away with these people. So I appreciated that about this story, and I hope that we can.
Yeah, I want to touch on what you said, Dagavir, where there's only like a couple Imperials, but their presence is massive. Like it is something that I think not a lot of Star Wars projects do very well. I think that a lot of times the Empire is used as like cannon fodder. Like,
yes,
these stormtroopers are expendable. Like, you don't care about them. Not that we care about them in this, but like they are like a player in the game.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that like, it's not even for something like super sinister that they're on the planet for. It's for like, hey, we're doing a census, mm-hmm. With some undertones of like, hey, there's illegal immigrants here, like refugees. And the one captain or
I think it was a lieutenant.
Lieutenant, yeah. of that Imperial group, like he says it like when he talks to Bix and he's like, hey, like there's like there's some discretion that can be used. Like it's yeah. There's like such ominous tones with everything that happens in there. But I think the fact that they're not here to like overtake the planet, but they still have to like jam comms. They're not allowing anybody to communicate in and out. And they're here to like check visas. It's like something that is happening now. Like it's something that like a person could imagine happening to them. And it allows you to step into somebody else's shoes for a little bit in that universe and kind of feel that fear.
Yeah, I mean, oh crap, what was I gonna say? It really just shows, like I noted earlier, just like a lot of connections to like, you know, what happens in the real world and is happening now. And also it kind of just shows like the fear that the Empire can just impose on ordinary people, not just like the people fighting, you know, against the Empire. It even shows like how they're just affecting like everyday people in their daily lives. And the, you know, the fear that comes with that, like, oh, we're going to get like deported or arrested. And just all that I thought was interesting. Season one with Ferrix. And I thought even on like this Outer Rim planet, it was cool to see.
Yeah, this is not the Republic. These are not clones coming to free Ryloth. This is not Coruscant, bro. You know, this is the Empire. And yeah. I think that's the important here because, again, I just think that the original trilogy does not show how terrifying the Empire was, how consistently the Empire used its own civilians to do what it wanted to do, you know? And I think Andor just is just does a great job of like, hey, these are Imperials. They do not have your best interest, no matter who you are.
Not at all.
You know, and it doesn't even matter like who Bix is or what she has done before. Like, this could just be a random person that's sitting there just trying to work, and this is what happens to them because of this guy trying to right there, like in front of everybody, because he's a damn Imperial, you know. And that's the whole point, is like all of these Imperials are capable of this, and that's I think what to me is so important when you're trying to establish the lore of who the Empire is.
Shows like anybody in the Empire is like a scumbag and feels like they can, you know, do that because, oh, we're the Empire. Who's going to tell us fucking no? So it really conveys that we haven't really seen in other Star Wars media.
Yeah. Yes. And let's continue that storyline here. Like, basically we see Cassian return to the planet, and he's looking to save his friends, and he saves almost all of his friends and family.
Please.
We see Brasso is caught with trying to what's the other guy's name?
What, the kid or
the kid? Yeah, the kid sees is like saying goodbye to his.
Just know he built the bomb in the first.
Yeah. The I think I'm frozen.
But Connor.
Oops, sorry.
All right, we're back.
We're losing them.
It might just be Zoom and video.
Yeah. Oh. My connection says it's unstable right now. All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. I hear you.
All right, sorry, we're back.
Yeah, we're back. Technical difficulties. As you were saying, Connor.
I was saying that the kid is saying goodbye to his girlfriend, and he gets caught trying to like bring him out, and he the Imperials surround him, and then he blames his friend. He's like, not that he blames it, but he like makes it look like his friend is innocent. Basically, he's like, oh, like you scumbag, you told on us, like just to save his friend. With the Empire. So it's like,
he thought he did that intentionally. I thought he like might have sold him out actually.
No, I took it the way that I took it was like he was making it look like his friend was like,
yes, that's what I thought too.
Yeah,
because I was watching, I was like, this guy has been helping out the entire time. Right. Was I really this blind to this guy, like randomly not standing
up? I was thinking,
and I was like, bro, big boy Barrels Russell doing this thing, and he's really doing it. He's big brain in it, you know.
That's what I got.
If that's true, damn, what a man. What a man.
That does make sense, but also I think they were just trying to convey that, like, yeah, this guy had good intentions to help, but like when he again, like you know, Mon Mothma's friend, when he under a little bit of heat, you know, he's looking out for his own interests kind of thing. So I'm not sure about
that's not the way I took it, because in that scene, like right before that scene, we see them hug. He's like, thanks for everything that you're doing. Like, and then after he says all that stuff, like he looks at him and he's like, he seems almost a little bit like the other guy seems a little bit shocked that Brasso is even like saying
this.
So that in my head, like Brasso is like saving one more person that he can in that situation, because the Imperials will be like, all right, like he wasn't like helping them, like he's not gonna, like he's fine, like let him live. But then we see that Brasso makes a run for it and gets caught. He gets caught with a stray.
I was screaming
the one time they can aim, like for real.
Go on, Jonathan. Yeah, the one time they can aim.
Yeah, the one time in all Star Wars that stormtroopers can aim. And the interesting thing is, like, they even like zoomed in on the stormtrooper, and like I was like, oh god, like what? Like what is like?
Yeah, he was like this.
And you see that he's like dead. I'm like, god,
Well, that's what happens when you have Tony Gilroy writing for stormtroopers, because all of a sudden their accuracy is correct. Yeah. But I was screaming at the TV, and I was like, nah, Barrels, you big bitch, you're too big. You can't run. You got on the damn speeder. They're going to hit you. Your body's too big. And they don't even show it. He's just there lying down. And I knew it was over, bro.
And it feels empty when, like, I felt empty when you see that. And like, it was like it was like super sudden, where like
not
he,
even
like
final
it just
words.
Cut. Yep,
not
like
even
you just,
final words.
Yeah,
it's a cut.
I thought he was gonna wake up. I thought he was gonna wake up.
Me too.
Yeah, he was just like,
I thought he was gonna Andor shaking him, and I'm just like, oh, he's gonna be wake, and he doesn't wake up, and I'm just like, what the flip?
Yeah, and that might be like intentional. I think I don't know if it was just like a bad cut or like, but I think it might just be like, hey, this is something that happens in war. Like you're just gonna like blink, and someone that you like know and love is just going to be dead. Like, and. Like didn't he, like you said, he didn't get anything with Cassian. He didn't get any last words. Like he was just escaping, and now he's dead. So that's something that is that broke my heart. But it's effective use of.
Yeah. I think Cassian's face at the end when he's flying off of that planet,
where
you see him slowly breaking and realizing, because Bresso was like the last person that he had next to Marv, you know, Marva.
Yeah.
So and like. They were all a family. And then he freaking leaves B2 emo. Like, what the? What are you talking about? What do you mean he leaves B2? Yeah, take it back. Go
that's,
back.
Oh, that's my son. That's my son. That's literally my son.
Go back. Oh, so yeah.
You can't just leave your child there.
B2 emo has been waiting for everybody. He's been waiting for Marv. He's waiting for everybody. And no one's waiting for him.
Where's Cassian?
Yeah.
And he's got the little, he's got the stutter too. It just makes him,
Jesus.
It's like a little kid that's a droid.
Yeah.
That was not okay. That was not okay. Someone needs to apologize right now.
Yeah. Jeez. But all right. So that's how we end, but let's backtrack to something that I completely forgot about. And I think I wanted to block this out of my head. Honestly, it was Dedra and Cyril. Like,
yeah.
I am pretty happy that we got a year skip, like a year ahead, because I did not want to have to go through seeing whatever the fuck that was with their relationship. Like, it can't be healthy. Like, I don't know.
All right. I have a hot take.
Yeah, let's break it down. Yeah, what do you got?
I actually love this scene because you can see. All right, I think Cyril is probably one of the most misunderstood characters in this entire series. He is a zealot, you know, but in my opinion, I think that he is someone that sees the Empire for what it can be, not what it is, what it can be. And at the end of this, you know, Dedra like was completely annoyed at this freak following him around and talking about all these things, always DMing him and everything. And then at the end, you know, you see that, oh my God, this freak saved me. You know, and now cut a year later, all of a sudden they have an apartment together. They're living together. But Dedra is making him, in my opinion, a better man, like half of what he wasn't, you know, especially after all that failure that we saw. I'm not saying it's healthy and I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying that this is probably really good for Cyril because you saw how controlling his mother was particular scene, which was crazy. Even Dedra was like, what the F, you know, like, oh my gosh. But I think that's what Cyril needs to push him to get stronger and eventually awaken to see what the Empire is at the end of this. I could be completely wrong.
No, but I'm hoping. I like that take. There's such like the way that scene, those scenes were shot, it was like so interesting to me. Like at one point they're just like setting tables with no dialogue at all. Like just like some background music. Yeah. And we see Dedra at one point, like pull up her outfit and she's smiling. And then she like cuts. It's like almost like a horror film.
Yeah, yeah, like, dude. Like, are they about to murder someone or host somebody? What is going on?
Exactly. And I do really enjoy how Dedra put his mom into place. Cause like you can tell that like they care, like you can tell that they care about each other. I'm just so curious to see like how this plays out, because it's something that like I don't know if I was expecting. Like you could kind of tell that there was like something, like obviously Cyril was obsessed with Dedra, like just like trying to like, I don't know, impress her or whatever. But
yeah, all the above.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All the above.
He had a crush. So
yeah, he had a crush. He loved her work. He loved everything. It was all the above, bro.
Yeah. And I don't know. I thought it was like, I was laughing too. Like you even mentioned it in our chat. You're like, him laying on the bed is going to be.
Yeah.
It's a meme.
It's like, such a great
and
meme.
Right when I opened at midnight last night, after I finished watching all three episodes, the first thing I see is him just plopping
Cyril on the bed. That was like, me after they left B2 emo.
Exactly. Yeah.
Go on, Jonathan. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, like, him laying on the bed like that, I thought was just a great analogy for like him still like being a kid to his mom.
I think the funniest part about it, though, is like, you know, we're used to these like big houses, right, in America, and then like it's just this little square thing. Like, he's literally in the next room. Yeah. He's laying down on the bed, like he's like, bro, we can see you, like we know what's going on.
And then Dedra has that talk with his mom, and then he like comes back, and he's like, what's going on here? Like, he's something
nice about me.
Something happened here. Like, what is exactly going on here? I don't know. I just like it was something I didn't know that I needed.
But yeah, it's not something I would ever like think that like could be in Star Wars, and it was, and I didn't hate it. It worked.
I think especially like. This is the Coruscant lower level, like not even really lower level. They're still on the surface and they're looking at everything. But you're seeing like how people of this class live on Coruscant, which is not something that we usually get to see. And it's just interesting how the apartments work, how the furnitures work. Cyril has this like weird ADHD thing. You can see the way he is like moving things around, the way he's cooking and everything else, and how someone like him can work and live with someone like Dedra, who I think is completely opposite. You know, even when like the mom is like intentionally dripping all over this sauce, all over the freaking kitchen table, and she's just like, it's fine, relax, you know, like control yourself, please. Yeah. You know, I have to deal with your mother. I don't need to deal with you.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of Skeleton Crew, where usually in Star Wars we see like the most wealthy people or like the most like the poorest people in Star Wars, but it's cool to see like a middle class, like I don't know if you consider them like upper middle class or something like that, like
especially Dedra.
It was cool to kind of see that aspect to it, which was it's similar to Skeleton Crew, where we see a suburb basically. Let's pivot to, I mean, what else do we have left here?
You want to talk about the ending of, Mon Mothma and dance and how, like, you know, intense and loose that was. And then also, like, this whole time you can see, a plan was being set up by Luthen to take care of her friend because he saw that, like, okay, this guy can't be trusted. We need to take him out. But, you know, Mon Mothma didn't really see that. And it's still like, oh, like, we'll just pay him off. We'll pay him off. And Luthen, like, can kind of see more clearly at this point, like, everything that's at stake. And Mon Mothma's kind of blinded by her friendship for this man. And, I mean, we didn't see it, but dude's going on a car ride to his death.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, what did you guys think of that?
There's that song that's always on Twitter with like, you know, the Cal Kestis like meme where like Yoda hides in Order 66 and then you have Cal Kestis with the gun, you know, Pony Stubby Rock, you know, that was going to happen to him. You know, that's exactly what was going to happen. I was like, oh, he's done. He's axed. It's over. It's a wrap, son.
Yeah.
You know, I will say though, it was a little unnerving to like, and difficult to deal with like Mothma, who's, like I said, a character that I just got so much respect for all of a sudden. Mm. Like going from a deleted scene in Revenge of the Sith that no one even had seen. And then now she's like one of the most important actresses in Star Wars, you know? And yeah, dude, it's just kind of sad to see her like having that anxiety attack in front of everybody. And she's just dancing. What is there else to do, bro? I mean, you might as well just enjoy this. Your daughter hates you. Your husband isn't even a husband. Like, it's a wrap too, you know, like we all know where this is going to go. So yeah, sure. Dance, have a good time. Once you leave Chandrila, it's probably time to start really just realizing this is your life. I mean, I know Yavin has a brand new freaking room over there for rent. So we'll start moving
nice
in.
New temple.
Yeah, dude.
Oh my God. Yeah. It actually broke my heart to see her reaction when her daughter's like, I would rather you be drunk right now.
Yeah. When she was like, cancel a wedding. I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah, which is probably the most intimate part, like that at least Mon Mothma had, the most intimate scene that she was trying to like genuinely say, like, hey man, you know, I know we got our differences, but you don't have to do this. And she was just like, nah, mom, F you, deuces, you know? So, damn, bro.
And God. Dude, I love Luthen so much as a
Yeah, such a good
character.
character.
He is like
He'll do
rapidly
anything.
shooting up my character list because like that is part, and that was a big part of season one too, but like part of the rebellion that you don't see in any movie. Like in the back of your mind, like you realize when Luke Skywalker shoots into the Death Star and destroys it, like you realize like so many people just died, but
Over 20.
you don't have any like you don't really have any context to that. You know what I mean? Like it's just like, oh my God, the bad guys died. But like when you see like people that you like we know that character now, like we are aware of him. And you see that he's just like ruthlessly just he's gonna get shot in this car and this cab. Like it's something that needs to be done. I think it's necessary for the story of the rebellion to have people like that. And Cassian does it too. We see him kill people that, you know, probably he doesn't want to, but he feels like he has to.
I think that's what's also crazy too is like, does this even happen without Luke Skywalker? Like, dude, does the rebellion even win? You know, like,
Right.
I mean, like, even still, like, bro, like, we saw A New Hope, we know what happens. That entire Red Squad gets bodied. Like,
Yeah.
it's literally Wedge and Han, who's not even a part of it, and Luke Skywalker in a freaking one of a million shot because he uses the Force, bro. Like, they all die in that movie, and like, even someone like Luthen, who's probably gonna die, no idea how. But you know it's coming, and like what happened? Dude, the Death Star wins, the Empire wins. Like everybody just gets deleted because even with how meticulous all this stuff is, like characters like Cassian, it's just not gonna work, bro. The Empire is just that big bad. That's why you need a superhero like Luke, you know, like Leia, you know, like Vader in the end, you know. So it's just really mind-boggling how even with all this stuff going, it's still not gonna work unless that one thing happens. So. Wild, dude. I love Star Wars. I love it.
I love Star Wars. I think Star Wars is at its best when it's not trying to be. My friend, Star Wars facts guy, who I absolutely love, says that he said that Star Wars is at its best when it's not trying to be Star Wars. It's trying to be, it's like in a different form. Like this is more like of a spy show, and like it's less about like making references to these things. It's more and more about like, hey,
Like
this is
telling a
a story
story.
that is in the Star Wars universe. You know what I mean? That's what, for me at least, that's what draws me into these new stories, is when it's not trying to be too much like cameo focused and things like that. And I think this does a really good job of like setting a tone and following it.
Yeah, Book of Boba Fett, take some notes.
Oh man, oh geez.
Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree. Like when Star Wars just really focuses on telling a good story and you really like feel a connection to these characters is when it's at its best. So that's why I'm all for this show. And obviously we know what happens, like you noted. But it's still just so cool to see these characters and Luthen. And also I just love to see, you know. We know Luthen's probably gonna die, but like he's literally willing to do anything for the rebellion, and I think it's really cool to see that.
Man. I enjoy it, but I did actually want to bring up a topic if you guys are okay, if you guys are
Yeah,
still
let's hear it.
into this. So I actually want to know what you guys don't like about this series right now. So I'll go first. My thing is just like I'm one of those people, okay? All right, I'm one of those people. It's very critical
I
of
think I know what you're gonna say.
this Disney stuff. I like lightsabers. I like the Force, you know. That's the main thing. But I mean, you look at bro, I got KOTOR stuff on the side, okay? I am who I am, okay? All right. But that is my biggest gripe because I do think Star Wars fans, most fans that watch movies only, have a certain like aesthetical issue. I don't even know if that's a word. I'm making it up today just for this. So they have this issue of like, where are the lightsabers? You know, where's the Force? Where's all these things? Andor is a great story. But I think it is very hard for a lot of movie-only Star Wars fans to get into Andor because it doesn't have that pace. It doesn't have that fire, that flash, whatever it is that Star Wars stories really do have. That is really my only gripe with Andor, you know, because even when I saw this first episode, it was a little slow. First 15 minutes were great because I saw that, oh man, the TIE Avengers is so gorgeous. I could watch that thing all day, you know. But after that, yeah, it was kind of slow. You know, but still, mwah, great. I love it. But that's just me. And I know other fans are not that tolerant.
Yeah, I would say I hear you on, you know, maybe not the show not appealing to like mainstream Star Wars fans. Like, there's definitely like, you know, a lot of lore and complexity in this show. I will say I do like this air quote slowness because it really like intentional with, you know, the stories that they're trying to tell and building the characters and building the suspense. So I don't know if I agree with that, but I definitely do agree that it would be cool to see some lightsabers. But
Yeah.
what do you think, Connor?
Yeah, I really do love like that it's I like that we're taking a break from the lightsabers, but I think one of the things that is tough about this is that we're not gonna get enough of the show to like
Correct.
get a basically there's a lot of plot lines already happening. And I don't think we're gonna have enough time with any of these characters without with the exception of probably like Cassian, like just like a like our main couple characters to like feel like it's like a true basically to be able to tie up all these storylines and have like a good through line. Just because I think this show was originally supposed to be 5 seasons. And then
Yeah, I think I heard that too, and that's why there's
Diego
all these
Luna
things.
and Tony Gilroy like basically were like this that would take like 10 to 15 years like of our lives to do that. So like I understand on that aspect, but I think the fact that it's going to be cut, we're gonna jump a year from now. Like next episode will be 1 year from where we left off. Like there's gonna be a lot of gaps to fill in that we're just gonna kind of have to do ourselves. And I think there's like a really like there would have been a really good opportunity to tell some of those plot points and stories through that year gap. Like I'm sure they're gonna do a good job of it, but like I just think there's a lot left on that bone.
Yeah, man, I can't. That's I think that's one of the reasons why I was asking you guys is because like I love it, and I would have loved to see an Inquisitor or two, you know, in like season 5 or 4, where like Ish is getting crazy. We need to kill Mothma right now, bro. You know, like Mothma, not Mothra, sorry, not Godzilla. So it's just one of those things where I see the buffet, and there just isn't a lot of food left. And I really wish I would have been here when there was a lot, plenty, you know. And I think that's what Andor can be. We know what it is. We know hopefully what it will be, which will be peak, you know. And it's just like, man, bro, we're really only gonna get 2 seasons of this, and I don't know what's going out there. I mean, Swagman might hate me for saying this, but at the end of the day, bro, I just like. Are we really not going to spend money on other Star Wars projects when this thing is looking so damn gorgeous? Sounds gorgeous. Like, are we doing this? Like, how many more of these do I gotta buy? Okay, how many more of these do I gotta buy? All right,
The
like
movie's coming.
I will pay
That's what I'm
so many
saying,
of these.
bro.
Yeah, I will buy so many of
I
these. So
don't
that's all I'm saying, man. It's just like. The quality is there, bro. Why does every Star Wars show not look like this, not sound like this? You know, I'm someone that loves Ahsoka series. Ahsoka series is my favorite because it does what I wanted the sequel trilogy to do. Favorite does not mean best. Those are two different things. No,
Yes, of course,
just
yeah.
my favorite, you know. But it's just one of those things when I see Andor, I was like, damn, bro, come on, man. You know, like
Yeah.
I really just wish. We could have more, and that's those same people. What do bro? Give Tony Gilroy whatever he wants and put him in a room,
For
bro.
real.
Start
Oh my
writing other Star
God.
Wars
Yeah,
stories. Why are we letting this man walk away? Oh, he's
he's
got a family. Okay, but feed them. Do something.
funny.
You know? Damn.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a
Damn.
good point.
I
Like,
agree. I like to say
yeah,
it's
man.
I like to say that like I don't want to use this, but like the it's volume. It like a lot of these projects have been volumized. Like it's so frustrating to me that like Kenobi did not look great. Like
No, it seemed rushed, and
a lot of
this
stuff,
show
yeah.
just
I love
seemed
the last two
so.
episodes. I like the last two episodes. I like
Yeah,
new,
it was
but
great.
yes, like there's, I don't remember a single damn song. I don't remember a single song. I don't remember a single song. Yes, everyone, Reva's trying to blast into the door with Kenobi and everything. Like, bro, we are literally in my garage. Like, that's how it looks, you know. And I'm not saying that to like to insult people. It's just like, bro, there is a difference when I watch Rogue One, when I watch Andor, when I watch. The Mandalorian first 3 seasons, like bro, there are
Which is
people
on
that
another
knows how
level.
to. Yeah, exactly. And the Mandalorian uses the volume, so it's clearly like Jon Favreau's not there. you know, whoever else is on there on the Mandalorian team, who is amazing people, Rick and everybody, like they know how to do this stuff, but and some people don't, and that's okay. But like when it comes to Star Wars, people are going to call you out when that inconsistency is there.
Yeah.
And that is my issue. That's it, bro. I just put the Andor label on everything, please. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
I feel like Kylo Ren. More.
Yeah. Yes. More. Yes. Yeah. That's my boy. I love Kylo. I'm not a big sequel trilogy guy, even though I got a damn Rey and Finn shirt on me right now. But,
Kylo's tough. I'm not the biggest sequel guy either. Connor well knows that, but
Connor is time. Yeah,
yeah. No, listen, I'm not a huge sequel guy either. I'm just a big Last Jedi guy. I'm just a big Last Jedi guy. I don't love like Force Awakens. Like I think it was
really
like
I like that film.
Like
I thought the Force Awakens was exactly what that movie needed to be. It needed to be safe for me, and it was safe for me. I was like, I don't know if Disney can handle this. You guys gonna hurt me? Are you guys gonna be okay? And then it did exactly what I wanted it to. Obviously there's flaws, there's problems, right? Last Jedi was that made me depressed. I got so depressed that I even went and bought tickets again to watch it again to understand if it wasn't just me that was butt hurt. And then I realized then I made myself two times depressed, you know. So yeah, and then The Rise of Skywalker, I was like, wow, why didn't we just have Rian Johnson just finish this off?
You know, that's how I feel about The Rise of Skywalker. Like the way that you feel about The Last Jedi is the way I feel about The Rise of Skywalker. Because I was like so excited going into The Rise of Skywalker because Luke Skywalker is my favorite character in Star Wars, and I really, really, really liked how he was like he had flaws still as further down the line, and I think the way that they played off of that, and like I don't know, the Last Jedi is the only movie in the sequels that mentions anything in the prequels. Like it's the only thing that like it just feels the sequel trilogy feels so separated from everything else I really like the way that they talk, like that they characterize Luke Skywalker and the fact that he's willing to sacrifice himself for what he thinks is the best thing for the galaxy.
Yeah, we may have to make that a whole topic.
Yeah, I could talk about that.
Yeah, we could go into
that for hours, bro. I really could.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm down because I've been tipping and toeing around it too much, you know. So I'm just like, hey, you know what? Let's just try it. I'm not an asshole, so
no, no. I'm looking to get this, like, see if I can stream this live to like TikTok at some point.
Yeah, that would be cool. Because I got like a live discussion,
like a studio. I have like TikTok studio or something like that that I need to set up.
Yeah, I get it, bro. Yeah, you do your thing on there, fam.
Yeah, so that's, I know you're more of the YouTube guy. So
I post on everything. Yeah. I post on everything. The only reason why I'm not a TikTok guy is because TikTok don't like me. That's it.
Yeah, you know? It's
that's it, man.
It's been so inconsistent, but
yeah. I get a video that goes over 10,000, and then the next one is 300, and it tells me I should promote it with ads. And
exactly. It's like, all right, cool. Yeah, let me just give you more money. Like what? Like what's going on here?
I just look at it like, oh, you know what? You're right. Yeah. Sure. but I mean, whatever else you guys want to talk about, I'm down, man. This was really freaking fun. I enjoyed this. So thanks for even tolerating my ass. So I appreciate it.
It's been great.
I've been ever since I found your content, I've been a huge like fan. Like the production that you put into your videos is something that I wish I could replicate. I just hold my phone in front of me and talk to it, where your production value is off the charts. And what you like, I found your podcast on Spotify today.
Wow,
I was listening to to the latest episode a little bit. So
let's go. Yeah, that one was a little struggle. You definitely got to go to the other ones, man. Some of them, like I'm cooking, man. You know, I only got like 22 followers on there, but I'm cooking, fam. That's awesome, man. Yeah, but your shit's always good, bro. You got
120,000
followers.
You've been going now for what, 5 years now?
5 years, yeah. Johnny and I went to college together, and in 2020 is when I started, like April 2020.
Has TikTok been out for that? Oh my god, it's 2020.
And then you helped me like get a little following when I did TikTok. Like I was able to
You had a couple thousand. You got to like 2,000 or 3,000. Did some lives together.
Yeah, we used to do lives together in that, and yeah, it's
back in the COVID days. That was
For real. I would go over to his apartment, and we would stay up till 3 a.m. and watch Mandalorian, and then like go live with Chaco and talk about it.
That's so cool.
We jump on a Zoom with Chaco and talk about Mando. That was season two, right? At that point.
That was season two. Yeah. But
those were the days. But I guess for to wrap this up, what are you guys thinking of the what's going to happen in the next couple episodes? I got a couple predictions. I'm curious to hear what you guys think is going to happen now, or where they're going to go.
I don't know. Like, it's a year later. Like, who knows what the hell is going to happen? We're going to see the Gorman massacre, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the massacre, and then I think at some point we're going to see like Mon Mothma like leave the Empire. Something's going to happen to her family. And you know how we see in Rebels, like the Ghost Crew, like helps her escape. Like, I feel like we're gonna see that at some point. So,
yeah,
I think that would be really interesting.
I feel like the Mothma stuff will probably happen the third week. So the third arc that's coming out. I feel like the most recent one that's gonna happen is probably Gorman and K2SO. I feel like that's what we're gonna get next. But that's just me and the way everything is. Plus, I was making Gorman videos about that source book from 1990 a couple weeks ago. So it's really interesting how I would love to see Tarkin do his thing and literally just park his Star Destroyer on all these protests. Not like, oh yeah, we'll go Tarkin, you know.
No, yeah,
you know. But like I want to see how different it's going to be from the actual source book, because the source book is, you know, this is before the prequel trilogy stuff started,
right?
You know, it still says like this is the Republic and Tarkin's a part of the Republic and his Republic warship, it's not even Star Destroyers, right? So I'm curious to see one, how fast the Empire is going to move in a year on Gorman, and what's actually going to happen to this planet, because they're talking about, you know, potential to lose the entire planet. Are we another planet destroyed that the Death Star does, and it's not even it's not even there. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, dude. I'm so excited. I don't know. This was super fun. We'll do this again next week if everybody's open to it.
Yeah. I'm so down.
But yeah, we appreciate everybody if you're still listening. we really appreciate everybody. And you know, let us know what you guys are thinking about Andor season two. But it's been a pleasure, Dagavir. Johnny, we appreciate it. May the force be with you all. Anything you guys want to say?
No, it's just good podcast, guys. Make sure you follow Jedi Connor on TikTok. You can follow me at Daddy Sheev if you want. I don't post, but but yeah, also check out Dagavir. Great to have you on the pod, man.
Oh, man, I'm just lucky to be here, guys. Thank you so much. Appreciate you all. Thank you.